This PrivCap podcast is sponsored by Alter Domus, a leading provider of integrated solutions for the alternative investment industry.
Hello and welcome to a PrivCap podcast. I'm David Snow, a partner at PrivCap Media. And today we're joined by Brian Murphy, a managing director at Portfolio Advisors, which is an investment manager that specializes in the private capital industry. Brian, great to have you here today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you are a veteran of the private capital industry, which of course has evolved and grown tremendously over the years. And one thing I thought would be really interesting to speak with you about is the changing nature of liquidity in private capital. There are now a lot of really interesting ideas taking place for how to make private capital more liquid and therefore more accessible to a broader group of investors. And you're right on top of these trends. I thought, though, that given your tenure in the industry, it would be interesting to start with you just walking us through sort of the traditional way that liquidity, or rather illiquidity, worked in the industry. You know, back in the, let's call it, old days of private capital, of private equity with limited partnerships, if a limited partner wanted to sell out of their share in a private equity fund, what did they have to do, and how difficult was it?
Yeah, I started in this asset class in 1988. And back in that time frame, if you wanted to sell an interest, there were a very small handful of buyers with limited amounts of capital, and you typically got a bid of 50% on the dollar. And so a 50% discount to the net asset value was the bid. And when you ask them, how'd they get their bid? They said, we think it's big enough that we'll get a good return, but we don't really do any analysis. And so it was a very small market, and it was very illiquid. 8 years later or so, our firm started in about 1995. And the volume in the secondary market had grown from, you know, tens of millions to about $500 million. So it was starting to pick up speed. It was growing as the asset class grew and as people realized that they did need some form of liquidity based on certain circumstances. By 2019, the volume had grown to about $100 billion. So it's been one of the fastest growing areas within the private markets. In the early days, it was really someone had a major event that went on. A business was sold. They needed to get rid of their, you know, their portfolio because the buyer didn't want it. Someone couldn't make their capital calls because of a global financial crisis or another major disruption like that. Starting in about 2003, there were several high-profile endowments that started to view the secondary market maybe as a portfolio management capability. And so they started to buy and sell in the secondary market to adjust their portfolio allocations, to tweak the returns.
So did it used to be the case that if an LP wanted to get out of a GP's fund, it was a little bit embarrassing for everyone?
Yeah, it is true that in the early days, there was a stigma. I mean, most professional institutions are used to being able to trade in their public markets anonymously in this asset class because the general partner reserves the right to approve a transfer. It's not hidden. It's not secret. You have to get that general partner's approval. And so people were worried that they would be viewed as a seller or someone that's abandoning the asset class. And so what you mostly saw were people that were selling their entire portfolios, or they were willing to sell something that they just absolutely hated and they didn't really care about what that stigma was. That is completely gone. We don't see any stigma issue anymore.
As people build out portfolios, whether they are institutional investors or individual investors, the starting point needs to be the understanding that these are, by design, long-term illiquid investments.
Absolutely. When we advise our clients, we always tell them, this is an illiquid asset class. Liquidity is increasing, but it is still an illiquid asset class. You want options to buy and sell in the secondary market. You never want to be forced to sell in the secondary market.
The private capital asset classes, you know, private equity, venture capital, real estate, infrastructure, credit, have largely been built on the backs of institutional investors and institutional capital. And yet, obviously, in the markets, there's a huge amount of capital that is from individuals, high net worth individuals and not as high net worth individuals. And they are increasingly interested in investing in these strategies. So what does that look like right now?
that all is being very closely watched by the financial services firms, by the registered investment advisory firms and the big wirehouses. And they're saying, well, how active should we be in getting our clients involved in this asset class? And the more institutionalized it is and the more flexibility that they see on the institutional side, the more comfortable they are putting their clients in. And so we see a significant move to the high net worth side. We are not a retail firm, but we have worked with some big institutions and done some feeders. And through those feeders on three or four different platforms, we now have over 100 family offices or high net worth individuals that participate in our own products, because these things are of great interest. People see them as a need to increase their total returns. They're not pleased with what they're earning from a pure fixed income standpoint on their public fixed income investments. There's more volatility, and the long-term expectations for public equities are less. With the right partners, you should be able to outperform the public market. And anytime you can outperform the public market and deliver a better return opportunity to investors, it's going to attract capital. And so we're seeing an increasing amount of capital coming from the high net worth side into the asset class.
Isn't there a challenge with high net worth capital getting involved in alternative investments because of the ticket size of many of their investments? If someone wants to sell, let's call it a $500 million sliver of a private equity fund, there are a lot of people who want to step in and help make that transaction happen. If it's someone who, you know, committed $50,000 to a feeder fund and they want liquidity, don't you run into the challenge of it's too small of a transaction for anyone to really want to spend time on it?
There are a couple challenges with high net worth investors. The first is that average ticket size. There's also an SEC hurdle, and many of the funds that are being raised in the marketplace require a qualified purchaser to participate. And that's a $5 million threshold for an individual. So you're really talking wealthy families, and those wealthy families can typically write a check of $250,000 or more. It's not uncommon for families to invest $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, even $50 million, depending on their wealth. But it is tricky, even for a wealthy family. You know, if they're worth $100 million and they want to have 20% of their portfolio in private equity, that's a lot of money. But many funds say, well, A, you have to write a minimum commitment of $5 million. That means that that investor would only have potentially four commitments to use up the entire 20 million. So it's not highly diversified. One of the reasons why feeder funds and even fund of funds became so popular for a long period of time, as people were getting used to the asset class, as small investors wanted access to the asset class, was that for that same $5 million commitment, you could now participate across several vintage years and participate in 20, 30, 40, 50 funds. Registered investment advisors, financial advisory firms, some of them have a big enough client base with enough client interest that is in the QP side that they participate. Some of them feel that they have enough interest that they can actually put a feeder together, and they do that as a service to their clients. But it's a tremendous amount of extra work. There's extra costs. These things have to be audited. There's a lot of accounting and legal and things like that. One of the great products that was invented, and you know, some of these are almost 15, 20 years old now, were the registered investment company type products, where through a new structure, people are able to sell to a lower net worth threshold and have a lower average ticket size and be able to aggregate that capital easier and do it through an evergreen vehicle. The nice thing about these registered products are they use 1099s and they come out in March. And so, you know, a high net worth family can participate in this asset class, which has historically always required you to extend your tax return. You can now participate with all of your other public type securities, get your 1099s and file your taxes on time, and you don't have to extend. So from that standpoint, they've solved a lot of the problems. It works like a mutual fund almost.
Maybe we can close with this as a final question. You know, further to a bit of a gazing into a crystal ball, do you foresee a huge wave of growth in the private capital markets in alternative investments coming from these individual investors, high net worth, family offices, and perhaps even you know, slightly lower net worth, you know, the mass affluent, has the nut been cracked?
I believe that we're still in the very early innings for the high net worth participants. I would think it's probably the second inning, maybe the third inning. I believe that hundreds of billions of dollars will flow into the asset class over the next decade or so. And there's a real yearning in the marketplace, especially for individuals that need that 7, 8, 9% return for the fixed income portion of their portfolio, because they're in retirement, because they need stability in the assets, they need yield. I think that there will be a tremendous demand, and it will continue to grow. So whereas in the institutional side, you see a bigger and bigger percentage of their portfolios being on the private side, I think you'll start to see financial advisors moving individuals from zero or a low percentage to 5, 10, 15, and 20%, because there will be better products, there will be more liquidity, and there will be an easier way to access it and generate that return.
Great. Well, Brian Murphy from Portfolio Advisors, I hope that as the alternative investment baseball game unfolds, we can check in with you from time to time and get your analysis about what's going on.
Terrific. Thanks, David.
Like what you hear on the PrivCap podcast? Visit PrivCap.com for more thought leadership interviews, articles, reports, webinars, and more.